Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Elaine Mansfield. Mansfield is a nutrition, exercise, and women's health counselor, as well as a hospice volunteer. For over 40 years, she has also been a student of philosophy, psychology, mythology, and meditation. Her beautifully written and very moving memoir about her husband's death will be published in October. It's called Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief, and it's being published by Larson Publications. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish.
Now, you began writing a journal during your husband's illness and then his subsequent death. What was it about writing that helped you get through this? It offered some kind of solace.
Well, I have an old habit of doing something called active imagination, where when you're all churned up about something, you try to personify it and give it a voice, and then you talk to it in writing.
Ah.
So I've been used to writing for a long time. I wrote a lot of women's health things also. So there was so much emotional intensity around what was happening personally, but also in the hospital events and the, you know, getting these diagnoses and things like that. So I knew that if I didn't write it down, I wouldn't remember what was happening. And I also wouldn't remember my own feelings and reactions to things. It was just an overwhelming blur.
Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet. I mean, I'll bet you're in a constant state of shock in many ways.
Either that or trying to get over being in a shock from a week ago.
Yeah, it was a constant
trying to keep some kind of balance, and writing helped me do that. And I also, I just knew I wanted to know everything that was happening and not forget.
Yeah. Now, when you were writing, were you writing uncensored? Were you able to find time and in, you know, a state of mind so that you could write uncensored, or were you just writing frantically? Tell us.
Well, it would depend, but I almost always could write at night or in the evening, you know, later in the evening before I went to bed. Vic was never completely dependent on me for everything until maybe the last week of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go into my room and write a while, or I could write when he was having a CAT scan, or there were times, but it wasn't that hard to find a little time to try to record what happened. And sometimes in the most chaotic moments, where there were would be a couple of days of one crisis after another, I would just write in the waiting rooms, write in cars, just try to keep track of what was happening.
Yeah. Tell us about Vic. I know he was incredibly healthy until this moment when he was having this flu that never went away and you discovered. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. He was a physics professor, but I always saw him as a kind of a nature guy, kind of a nature mystic.
Mm-hmm.
He loved our land. He was very physical. He also loved, when he was older, he really enjoyed weightlifting and being aerobically fit. And he had a very, very healthy diet. And then he developed a lingering flu. He hadn't retired yet. And he was just started feeling more and more fatigued. And it took almost 6 months to get a good diagnosis for what was going on. But it was very surprising to see this person with a massive amount of energy and vitality start fading in this way that was frightening, but we didn't quite get it for a while.
Yeah. You talk about it so beautifully in your book as well, all the stages. Now, did you and Vic go through these stages that, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross made him famous?
Yeah.
You know, denial, anger, grief, and then acceptance. Did you go through that, or did you at first totally accept that this was true, he was dying of cancer?
I love Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, but I didn't find those stages very helpful for me in any part of this experience.
Ah.
Both Vic and I had years and years of meditation experience and studying philosophy, so Vic never once said, why me? It was, why not me? He didn't want to die. He didn't want to have cancer. But he also never felt like a victim. He didn't deny the situation. Although I think as you're getting toward the end of the line with cancer therapy, there's a way in which you sort of deny in order to keep going, because they're still, oncologists still offering you things, and you want to take them, but another part of you says, this probably is not going to work.
Yeah.
But you keep choosing life. So there was not denial, and neither one of us were angry. And I think that it was easy for me. I would get angry, and I talk about my own anger in the book, especially after he died. I would have some anger. But I never I never saw him be angry about his situation, and I think that helped me not respond with anger.
Yeah. So do you think, you know, you have a connection with the Dalai Lama, you and Vic both had a very spiritual life in many ways. And do you think that helped deepen your acceptance? And, you know, because a lot of people are angry. I lived through the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco. People were angry.
Yeah.
About dying, especially dying young, dying while vital.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about the spiritual experience that helped you through this.
Vic wasn't so young. He was 65 when he got sick, which seems young in some ways, but
it is.
It's not like someone in their 30s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just his temperament to take the blows of life without getting angry about them, but to try to work with them, kind of a heroic temperament. And it certainly did help to have all these connections with various teachers of not just the Dalai Lama, but Hindu teachers, our own teacher, Anthony Damiani, who wasn't part of any tradition really, but loved them all. And to have that background and that sense of perspective about mortality was extremely helpful. And the Dalai Lama was sort of showed up in various times in this experience. And he was both incredibly loving and also had that attitude of, we all have to die sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you talk about that. And Vic met him and presented him with his book. And
yeah.
You have a photograph of Vic with him.
Yeah.
A very touching photograph. Were you and Vic brought up in traditional religion? I was just wondering how the rest of your family dealt with this.
Yeah. Vic was a Catholic as a child, but his family wasn't. He was raised by his mother, and she was really not very strongly religious. She's still alive, by the way. So he, though, was very linked to the Catholic Church as a child and sang, was a soloist in church, and had a lot of kind of mystical feelings. But then when he was in his 20s, the rules of Catholicism, there was too much conflict with his rational self.
Mm-hmm.
And so he moved away from that. But he was always looking for something else. I was raised loosely Protestant. I also had kind of a mystical bent as a child and some experiences that I never could quite explain. You know, just feelings of seeing sunsets and this sense of there's something bigger than me.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't have a way to get there. And then when, in 1967, when I walked into the American Brahmin bookstore with Vic and we started meditating and studying different traditions and different teachers, that became a way to bring out that part of ourselves.
Yeah, and it carried you through this.
And my son...
Profound experience. Go ahead and what were you going to say about your son?
You ask about family, and my sons really handled it the way we did, the way Vic and I did, and their sense of what they learned from the experience from their dad was the practice of kindness, that no matter what lousy situation you're in, you can be kind to everyone you're dealing with. And his mom, who couldn't really accept what was happening, Vic was her only child, and very, very painful for her, and she kind of tried to protect herself from the pain of the situation. And I have a brother. I have one brother. That's the only living close relative other than my kids. And he really helped us out in a medical sense because he had good connections and helped us find the right doctors to keep Vic going as long as he could.
Yeah. You talk about that in the book. Mm-hmm. Now, you lived firsthand how difficult it is to be a caregiver and how frustrating it can be. And you talked about some of the anger you felt.
Yeah.
You didn't have enough time for yourself.
Yeah.
Talk to us about what you learned from that experience.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there were those moments, and they weren't that often, but I wrote about it in the book because I feel it's important, firstly, for caregivers to forgive themselves. There were moments when there was this inner, almost a child in me, or some kind of self-preservation instinct that would come up and sort of say, what about me?
Yeah.
I want my life. What's happening here? And so when you're a caregiver like that, you give over, I did anyway, give over the vast majority of your life to another person's needs. And I think that unless we're saintly, and maybe even if we are saintly, the ego is going to respond to that sometimes. So we were pretty lucky. And also, I know with women who, and not just women, but people who've lost someone to something like Alzheimer's, where you're not getting support back from the person, that caregiving Vic was not as difficult as some situations are.
Yeah, yeah. But you talk about in the book how this was kind of the road you took with Vic. You gave up a lot just for the relationship.
Yeah.
You talk about that in the book, and so you start getting frustrated when you weren't getting enough back from this.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard other people talk about that.
Yeah.
Now, talk to us about the fact that Vic died in the hospital, surrounded by friends.
Yeah.
Everybody was there. People were supporting you that day.
They were.
But tell us what happened that day.
I didn't know exactly what was happening with him, and the doctors didn't either. And they told me they were trying a new chemo, and they said, then he can go home probably next week, and you should go home because you're exhausted and burned out. So I asked a friend to come and stay with Vic at the hospital. I never thought we were going to stay at the hospital.
Yeah.
We always thought he would die at home. But then I went home that night, and then I got a call, like sort of in the middle of the night, that things were not going well, that he was really taking a downward spiral. And then driving the next morning to the hospital, I was trying to talk to my doctor, Michael Eisman. I was trying to talk with all my resource people, talk to an oncologist, talk to a pulmonary specialist, and try to find out what kind of decision I should make, because they wanted to put him on a respirator. So I finally decided that I would not put him on a respirator, even if I didn't get there on time.
Mm.
But I did get there, and he lived a couple more days in a certain level of consciousness, sometimes more than others, but a couple of different friends came and stayed, and then other people kind of came in and out. But there were people around, and especially two people, a man and a woman, who were there all the time for that period of time. And then Vic seemed to be waiting until my son arrived.
Yeah.
So when my youngest son arrived, he stopped fighting for breath and died 45 minutes later. But he gave our son a beautiful blessing. So we got stuck in the hospital.
Yeah, that's
something. And hospice came in,
yeah,
and they said you could move to the hospice ward. And my doctor in town, Michael Eisman, said we can bring him home in an ambulance. But he was so rattled, if he just gasped for breath, if he was moved an inch. So I decided that he was okay where he was. There was nice light, and we were in a private room, and so I made the decision to stay there at the hospital and not try to move him around.
Yeah, yeah. And the way you describe it in the book, it sounds very peaceful.
It was a very peaceful few days, 3 days, yeah.
Yeah.
Once the decision was made not to do any more heroics and not to do a respirator, once I understood that that would mean that he'd be on a respirator for a few weeks and they really couldn't treat the cancer anymore.
Yeah, and he was having heart attacks during all this,
having heart problems. Earlier on, his heart was really involved. And I understood that there was no way to give him a good life again.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, my guest is Elaine Mansfield. We're talking about her new memoir called Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief. Now, I want to go back to the spirituality, because you talk about how Tibetan Buddhists believe that the dead complete an after-death experience 49 days after dying, and then they become reincarnated in another woman's womb, which is a very interesting belief. Where do you stand on that? Did you believe that that's what happened with Vic?
I don't think I have a strong belief system about that. Vic once asked another teacher of ours, Paul Brunton, what he thought about that. And Paul Brunton said, well, if that's what people believe, that's what will happen. That's what he said.
I love that.
Because Vic was asking about all these different kinds of ideas about reincarnation. I felt through this experience that I don't know what happens. I don't even know if there is reincarnation. I think it's possible, but I don't know. Vic was very attached to Tibetan Buddhism. He taught a class about Tibet, which was mostly about Buddhism, for 25 years. And I knew he understood and knew the Tibetan death rituals very, very well because of his class. So those felt at the moment to be the right rituals to use. And I did follow some of those ideas, like what you do after death and what you do in 7 days. But it was not out of a sense of strong religious belief. It was that I needed a structure for my own grief, and this was offered to me. And I knew it would be okay for Vic. What he did after his death, I don't know. My experience of him was that he was out of here. He was on to something else. Uh-huh. Where, what, I don't know.
Yeah. Did you still feel that he's, I mean, a lot of people think he's still with me. You hear people say that after somebody has died. Or have you let him go?
I feel like he's very much with me as just a part of myself. Mm-hmm. I feel like he kind of lives in my heart. I can consult him about things. I mean, I sort of know what he would say. I still live in the house we lived in, and I live on the land where we lived, and he made a huge change in this 71 acres of land, beautiful trails. And so I feel his presence around that way.
Yeah.
But whether it has anything much to do with the man, Vic, who died, I wouldn't try to say that. I can only tell you my experience, which is I feel supported by our marriage. I feel supported by the land. I feel supported by the life we led together. And I still feel supported by his love. I know he loved me so deeply.
So he's still with you in many ways. After Vic died, you say in your book that my chest feels so small to hold my heart, feels too small to hold my heart. And you don't remember grief being so physical.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about that. It finally dissipates, right? I mean, do you still feel that?
Yeah, no, I don't feel that now. Mm-hmm. I can remember talking to friends who were very attentive and taking walks with people. I can remember telling them how much my heart ached, really, really ached. And I...
It wasn't like when somebody thinks they're having a heart attack, right? It was a different kind of ache.
Well, it didn't feel dangerous, and I didn't feel short of breath or anything like that. There was just this deep, persistent aching around my heart, and I hadn't remembered that from when my dad died. I definitely didn't have it, but I was only 14 then. My mom died in 2007, the year before Vic did, and I definitely didn't have that then.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my experience when Vic died. Very, very physical heartache.
Yeah, literally. Literally. I'd never heard anybody describe it that way. I found it compelling. We all know all deaths and all grieving are different for different individuals. But what did you learn from this experience that you wouldn't have known if you hadn't gone through it? And what can you tell people who might be going through this?
I didn't learn these things immediately, but in time, I learned a number of things that matter a lot to me. One is I got a certain perspective from the experience about what it means to be human and what it needs to be mortal, what it means. And I sort of feel my vulnerable human position, not in a scary way, but I feel that. Then I also felt how strongly grief and love come together, which we would all know if we'd pay more attention to operas and great books, that love ends in loss for the person left behind. And it's a natural experience, and it's natural to grieve for what we've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I want to add a third thing, which was that ritual helped me so much, and I didn't know that would be true. Personal rituals, small things, taking flowers to the place where Vic's ashes are buried, lighting a candle, little things like that helped soothe me in a way that I had not imagined that it could.
Yeah, yeah. It almost felt in your book that you were talking about how Vic's death and your life, your spiritual life, the way you developed it, made you go deeper into that idea of kindness.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had mentioned that before, and that was a huge lesson of the whole experience. And I don't think I'm quite as good at it as Vic is. I mean, he could allow someone. He was amazing. But his life was on the line, and that brings out things in people. But, you know, someone could poke his arm 12 times looking for a vein and not be able to find it. And he would tell the nurse, it's okay, relax, don't get excited, I'm fine. And I know they're so used to people yelling at them.
Oh, and, yeah. I'm raising my hand here, listeners.
Right. So he was amazingly tolerant of the indignities of his experience.
Yeah, more so than you would have been.
Yeah,
sure.
And it's sad what happens to the body, and you're not in charge anymore. And he handled it with grace. So he taught me a lot about kindness, and my sons and too. It feels like the three of us really took that in.
Yeah, it sounds like it from the book. Now, you've moved on, obviously. You're a published writer now. You've been writing a blog about grievance and so on. Are you amazed that you survived in this way and are thriving? Is this something that you knew you were going to strive toward?
It's been very surprising. I looked around for things to do, volunteer things to do, and tried a couple of other things. And then I landed at hospice, and one of my sons said, why would you want to work with death? And I felt like I needed to be around people who understood mortality, and I mean, not that they love it, but they know how to deal with it. They're not surprised. So over the years, I got more and more involved with hospice work and with bereavement work. And then with writing, not as a counselor, because I'm not a counselor, but writing about the experiences of grief, the experience of love and grief, the experiences of trying to get through life and find my new life. And that writing seems to have resonated with a lot of other people who've not only had someone die, but maybe they've had a divorce, or maybe they've lost their job, or they've had a huge sea change in life, and they have to rebuild.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think somebody who's gone through an experience is the best of counselors. Myself, you know, and you don't have to go be a psychologist to help people through things like this. How are your sons?
My oldest son, he's 44 now. He has married to a really beautiful woman. If I could have chosen someone for him, I would have chosen her. So I'm very happy about his life. He owns a computer business in North Carolina, and he's extremely helpful to me in a lot of ways, including with computers. And my other son is a musician in California, and he has a very serious relationship. And they're all coming for the book launch on October 3rd, and my brother, too, and my niece. And so this is going to be this huge family celebration.
That's great. That's great. And Vic will be there with you, too, I'm sure. Now, like I said, you write a blog about grieving, and you give workshops helping people through their experiences. Do you ever want to get out of this grieving business and go out and live life in a different direction? In San Francisco, somebody used to say, do you want to be a professional widow? To somebody who, for years and years and years, just talked about the death of their spouse. What do you think about that?
I understand that very well. And I also understand that because I've written this book, it might keep me circling around these stories longer than if I decided to do something else.
Yeah.
But this is what happened. And I didn't really mean to write this book, except last couple of years I've really meant to write it. But in the beginning, I didn't. But it was something that came out of me. I don't want to be a professional widow. I do not want to focus my life on grief. I think I'm very interested in writing about how my life has developed and also what different spiritual threads hold my life together. So I write about those things, too, at my blog. But because of the book and because I'm still telling stories sometimes about my early relationship with Vic. So I'm also in the blog talking about relationship a lot. What makes a marriage work, and how do you learn how to fight with each other and get over it and not take each other down,
Destroy what you've created. Yeah. Well, what do you hope people will take from this book? I know you're going to be, we'll talk about it at the end, you're going to be giving readings and talking to people. What are you hoping for this book?
Well, partly it's a personal story. It has a memoir quality. So I hope that people will be interested in the evolution of what happens to someone in this kind of experience. I also hope that people will have some kind of compassion for other people who are going through it. I know a young woman told me recently, after reading something I'd written, that she felt so much more tolerant of her mother's circling around her father's grief. And I just went ahead and circled for that first year. But a lot of people don't get a chance to do that. I hope that people will take away a sense of how you might deal with grief, the kind of attitude you might hold when you're faced with mortality or someone you love is.
And we all will be.
Yeah, that's part of living. I hope that people will gain a sense of, I can handle this head on, I can do this in community, I can ask for help, and I can do it in a container of love.
Yeah, yeah. We're almost out of time. You give workshops on grieving and death and so on. What do you tell people? Just your story, or how do you tell them to work through it?
No, I try to give people experiences. I just did a workshop with Janice Kovar at Hospicare, and I'm going to give a workshop myself at something, it's called Camp Widow, believe it or not, and it's with Soaring Spirits Loss Foundation. They have conferences all over the country, but this one's in Toronto, and I will give a workshop on using ritual to heal. So I will actually take people through rituals of honoring the person they've lost, talking about that, and then trying to find a way to step into a new place, into a new life. I'm very interested in that transition out of being a professional widow into being a woman who stands alone in strength.
Yeah, that's
or
great.
Or chooses to remarry, or whatever that person chooses. But I want to help people get stronger. I want to give people ways to do that. So that's what I try to do.
That's great. That's great. That sounds just wonderful. Tell us where people can come hear you read. You have a couple of dates coming up.
Tell us. I have a couple of local events coming up. One is Damiani Wine Cellars on October 3rd at 6 p.m. That will be a celebration. My whole family will be there. And the other one is Buffalo Street Books. It's a benefit for hospice. They're going to receive some of the proceeds. So it's Buffalo Street Books, October 12th at 3 p.m.
That's great. And give people your website.
My website is my name, so it's elainemansfield.com.
Elaine Mansfield, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Elaine Mansfield's book is called Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief, and will be available next month through Larson Publications. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you. Great
thank
work.
Thank you, Tish. It's always so great talking with you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.